You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 91. This minute begins with Wayland asking Shaw, "Or have you lost your faith?" and ends with Shaw wincing as she suits up. This minute is where Noomi gets to worldly act, and she does a great job of letting us see her progress through all these feelings. Exhaustion, defeat, acceptance, and finally resolve. It's clear how tired and traumatized she is as she washes her face. Then she reaches for Charlie's ring, puts it on, and brings it to her lips. This is a totem of strength for her. Where she once would have reached for her cross, she now reaches for the last symbol of something that was tangible in her life. She does not pray in this scene either. Had this been the Shaw of a few days ago, we would absolutely expect her to be looking to her God for strength. But they've done well here to leave it ambiguous. They don't do anything so overt as showing her destroying some symbol of her faith. And she doesn't answer Wayland when he asks her if she has lost her faith either. She only cries. A really vulnerable, honest, ugly cry that leaves her whole face moist, which is honestly impressive. I don't know how you do that. The only dialogue in this minute is when Shaw quietly says okay to herself, but you can absolutely see her thought process nonetheless. I never really paid much attention to this scene before, and of course, such a quiet little scene is not what gets the internet buzzing, but this is a masterfully delivered scene, both in how it is shot and performed. As she stands before the basin, she is still in her bandages. The lighting is dramatic, making her look even more muscular. But in keeping with the tradition of Alien, this is not meant to tantalize, but to show how broken and vulnerable she is. She is only human. At the same time, we see her choosing to overcome that and continue to fight for her survival. In short, we are seeing what a badass she is. Somewhat related, the Ripley underwear scene is still controversial to this day. I'm of two minds about it. Costume should never take you out of a scene, and for me, those undersized undies kill the tension every time because I can't imagine someone choosing something that uncomfortable to wear to work. Is she deliberately buying underwear that is too small? Are they child's underwear? Did she take her daughter's underwear? Or do they just make bumpster undies in the future? Bumpster is the unofficial word for it. Back in the 1990s, Alexander McQueen was fascinated with extremely low-rise pants, revealing the posterior rugae, as is the medical term, apparently. Unlike breast cleavage, I can't ever see bumpsters becoming socially acceptable, primarily because it's just not practical. Pants just will not stay up like that. I know some people are into seeing that region exposed. I mean, if it exists, there's a fetish for it. But to me, it's comical more than sexual. But on Ripley, it's annoying. Get this woman some bigger underwear. Oh, there's a xenomorph in the scene. I wasn't looking, I was distracted. But on the other hand, she does look thoroughly unprepared and vulnerable. Her clothes look flimsy, like they're about to fall off. So it does succeed in that sense. By contrast, Shaw is wrapped in bandages, and she is properly secured into them. It is strange that she is bandaged like this, but it does achieve the intended goal to make her look like she's been through a war, to make her look roughed up and vulnerable and injured, and yet she's battle ready. The contrast between these women and their costuming could be described by the Thies titillation theory. William Ware Thies was a costume designer best known for his work on Star Trek the original series, in which many of the actresses were scantily draped in fabric in such a way as to defy gravity. The theory posits that a structurally sound bikini, no matter how beautiful, will never be as exciting as a bikini that looks like it could fall off at any moment. Thies hoped that viewers would continue to watch, even if it was only in the hopes of seeing a wardrobe malfunction. To his credit, it never happened, and they were brilliantly constructed. The same cannot be said for his work on Season 1 of Star Trek The Next Generation. I could go on a very long lecture about how spectacularly they failed with those uniforms, but long story short, they used 2-way stretch instead of 4-way stretch, cut it the wrong way, and then proceeded to add stirrups into the pants just for extra torture. I was fascinated by that disaster. It's everything that could possibly go wrong. It's the most unprofessional thing to have ever happened in the costume industry, and for years I was like a detective trying to piece together what went wrong, so I'm glad I finally know now. I really don't even understand the logic behind it, because you can make very streamlined costumes without resorting to that. Like, you look at the Orville now, and those are super tailored. They are just, there's not a wrinkle on them. They're beautifully made, just gorgeous. And that's obviously a show that's referencing the Next Generation. And then, yeah, the later seasons of Next Generation, those uniforms, they are looser fitting by design. But I think that looks good. I actually quite like this uniform, so. William Thiess kind of lost his mind at some point, maybe. Anyway, that is what's going on here with Ripley in her flimsy outfit compared to Shaw, who is strapped in tight. There is a kind of parallel going on between this scene and the one in which Holloway stood at this same basin. He washed his face before going out, and in his case, he never returns. Might Shaw face the same fate? In Holloway's scene, he removes his ring. In Shaw's, she picks it up and puts it on. Interesting how it just happens to fit her just fine. This is movie logic. You see it all the time when a character grabs clothing out of desperation and somehow it fits them perfectly. The only notable detail about Holloway's ring is that it is inscribed on the back with the Captain A.C. Holloway, presumably his father or grandfather or someone like that. In the background, we can see a door slightly ajar. This was also visible in Holloway's scene, and yet I totally missed it. It wasn't lit very well then. Now the lights are all on, and we can see it leads to another room with a simple desk and chair in it. It's a rather odd addition. The quarters are otherwise a studio apartment, and yet you have this seemingly unconnected room attached. It honestly looks like it leads into the hallway if it wasn't for the desk. I would have said it would make more sense to have that area be the ensuite bathroom. It's a strange set detail to me because they always keep their door slightly ajar. They want to show it off, I guess, but why? I think in this scene they've used it as another light source to illuminate Numi, but I mean that can be accomplished in a number of other ways. I would love to know what the logic behind that room was. On that note, I also would like to know if they redress rooms for different purposes. I've looked as closely as I can, and it's hard for me to say for certain. I know they built a lot of the sets and wanted the ship to be mostly continuous, but some of the hallways and smaller rooms could easily be the same ones repurposed, but it's hard to say for certain. Shaw's surgical scar is looking mighty clean for something so new. No bruising or swelling at all. Come on, guys, her abs would still look amazing, even if you were to add all of that. And then she pops some more pills. Lady, you have taken enough medication. Surely there's a threshold, there's a limit to what it can do for you. This minute ends with Elizabeth painfully zipping into the latex bodysuit, and because she's injured and sweaty, it looks even more uncomfortable. I remember being a little confused by it when I first saw this film. Janti's reasoning was that there should be a kind of compression suit under the looser-fitting EVA suits. But these latex suits have a high collar. They would be visible if you wore both at once, so even on a subconscious level I saw that and knew these things don't belong together. I think removing the collar would have gone a long way to help marry those two costumes, so if they just showed people putting on both in a suiting-up scene like the one at the beginning, then we would be familiar with it. It would be integrated into our understanding of how these costumes work. It's a late reveal, as it stands, and we aren't given any explanation. Generally, in genre films, if we're busting out new hero costumes like this in the last act, it's a feature of the story. But purely from a visual perspective, I think it looks amazing. It's really slick and futuristic, and the blue and orange are a really distinct and unique choice. The blue has a kind of carbon fiber print to it, and I have to wonder if they had that custom printed or did they manage to source that and just found it by chance. I'll have more to say about these costumes in later minutes, but overall, they look great, just needed to give us a bit more context. I recently discovered Ridley's mother's name was Elizabeth. I wonder if that's who Shaw is named after. In the initial script, it was Jocelyn, so it was changed, and presumably with a purpose. We may never know. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on travandesigns.com, TRAVAAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. If you'd like to become a Patreon supporter, like my Patreon pals Tariq and Mark Boda, then head on over to patreon.com/traviandesigns.